Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Dip, 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 dip. It's amazing that you boars and ghouls keep coming back for more. You must be gluttons for punishment.
I got you!
This is FilmSack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to FilmSack, episode 437, where it almost feels like Halloween, but isn't quite yet. I'm Scott Johnson, and we're here to mine the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind. Joining me today, Brian, he's got a Firebird, and he's going to fly it all the way to Hollywood Dunaway.
Room, look at my hair. Beautiful. Oh, hi.
Hi.
And now the final thoughts of a fat guy in a trailer park as he reflects on his life. Well, fat stuff.
Oh,
another
no.
time for the last time.
Yeah.
But no need to get broke up.
Oh, he's just breaking up. Now. He said broke up and then broke up.
Damn it, son of a butthole. And you guys aren't. The funny thing is, you guys haven't broken up for me at all now.
That's
so
hilarious.
I'm so breaking up, but you guys aren't breaking up.
But now, but see, and now you're not
so
at all.
So put it on pause.
Try it again.
And let me reboot my router because apparently that's what Scott thinks it is.
All right, I'm going to pause. We'll okay. All right, we'll be the people at home will never. Hey, it's like nothing ever happened. We didn't even go away. Dunaway, you were saying?
Oh, I mean, what? Oh, you said something about the Corvette Firebird flying to Hollywood. And I said, no way, man. Look at my, oh, hi. And now the final thoughts of a fat guy in a trailer park as he reflects on his life. Well, fat stuff, this is it. It's Miller time for the last time. But no need to get broke up about it. I mean, just look around you, Fatso Gribbons. What a beautiful life you have lived, albeit too short and perhaps a little too fat. So, goodbye, topless mermaid statuette I won at the county fair, popping balloons in 84. See ya, Iron Maiden mini poster I won at the county fair, tossing rings in 86. I'll catch you on the flippy flop, prize-winning miniature fatso cow. I kissed at the county fair in 87. I'll miss your face the most. But I will carry our love into the afterlife like a burning torch to light my way. Loco! Hey, you know what? Bury me in the backyard with my bullshit hat, or don't bury me at all.
Dude.
Wow.
You made more backstory for Fatso than they gave Fatso. That's amazing.
Right. Well, man, right. I mean, yeah, well, you know, a picture's worth 1,000 words, and for some reason they kept panning his house as he died, and I'm like, okay.
That was
I know all
weird.
The stuff that was getting shot. Like, yeah, you're right. Just, like, there's some lore there. I want to know more.
Yeah.
Clearly an Iron Maiden fan. I must know more.
Yeah. I'm a fan of boobs.
Very nicely done. Also with us, Randy. You ever seen an oil slick poncho? Jordan.
Aloha, Scott. Brad.
Hi.
Did I ever tell you boys about the time I ran a general store in Indian Country just up the road from a cold water swimming hole that was real popular with tenacious, thankful hitchhikers? So thankful. Why won't they stop saying thank you? Anyway, you're going to be as successful as me in this venture as long as you follow my two rules. Number one, Stock that store with lots of valuable hardware tools and an open bucket of onions spilling out sideways. Don't you know exactly how that store smells now? Yes, you do. Number two, make sure that everyone you ever come across has to drive a fairly great distance. What is it about driving in the country? I don't know, but it definitely makes people fail to see signs of danger or even the non-danger of a black plastic tarp. That'll be the end of you, Tasha Yar.
I'm so glad you brought that up because I was going to later. That's totally what it reminded me of is the Tasha Yar killer. Finally, it gets its holy film cow. Debut. Yeah, pretty good stuff.
No, you mean prize-winning holy cow.
I guess
prize-winning holy cow.
Yeah, and it wouldn't be its camera debut. It'd be its film debut because it was already on TV. No, wait. This was before that. This was before it was ever on TV.
Right.
Also with us, Brian, thanks for the ride, Lady Ibbot.
Yeah, once it made its transition to television, things were never the same for a plastic garbage bag. No. Okay. Stephen King Creep Show 2 promo, take one. Hi, I'm Stephen King. You may know me from stories like Christine, Cujo, Pet Sematary, and The Dead Zone. Well, coming to a theater near you this spring 1987 is an anthology series that I'm really excited about. I did listen to a bunch of his interviews, by the way. Creep Show 2. Since my first novel, Carrie, I've written 27 suspense and terror novels, and sometimes I have an idea that doesn't need the 400-page treatment. Like the original Creepshow, Creepshow 2 collects three of those short stories into a full-length feature film. Take The Raft, for example, as we follow four teenagers who go swimming in an isolated mountain lake. The twist is that there's a no swimming sign on the lake that's been covered by overgrown vegetation. Okay, now let's do this again. All right. Stephen King, Creepshow 2 promo, take two. Hi, I'm Stephen King, and I want to tell you about Creepshow 2. You know, I write a lot of books, and when I can't finish one, I turn it into a short story. No, that's not good either. All right. Stephen King, Creepshow 2 promo, take three. Hi, I'm Stephen King, and I want to tell you about Creepshow 2. Here's what you can do if you go to your local multiplex. You can buy a ticket for Creepshow 2, then sneak into Beverly Hills Cop 2, which is playing in another theater. Once that's over, if you time it right, you can go back to the Creepshow 2 theater and watch the third segment called The Hitchhiker. Then you can sneak over to another theater and watch The Secret of My Success, starring Michael J. Fox and Helen Slater.
Those things were all in the theater at the same time. You did a lot of historical fact checking.
I did a little historical research.
Yeah, I'm impressed with that. We don't usually require that kind of work here, but nicely done.
That's dedication.
When we do your quarterly review, we'll remember this. Thank you.
I'm writing it down.
As you heard Brian say a couple of times, Creepshow 2 is what we're watching. And if you're at home going, wait a minute, you guys never did Creepshow 1. Yeah, it's one of these again, where we're starting with the sequel.
Don't worry, there's no continuity. You can watch these in any order.
Any order you want. Yeah, exactly right. The big difference here is that Stephen King, obviously, still involved. These are his stories. But the first movie, George A. Romero, the famous zombie man, did the screenplay in this one. In the first movie, he directed it, so it was a little bit more hands-on from Romero. I think I've seen both, but now I'm not 100% sure. I'm still not sure if I've seen both.
You've seen both now, right?
I have now, I'm sure, because I remember the Stephen King as a Chia Pet thing from the first one.
Right. And you probably remember Leslie Nielsen burying Ted Danson up to his neck for cheating on his wife.
Yeah. Head Danson.
Head Danson. Kinda, I have a memory of that, but it's super vague.
The third one was a werewolf in a crate under the stairs or something?
Oh. That I don't remember.
Right. And then the stick together story was that this? No, I'm thinking of another one.
See?
I was thinking it was about a cat, but it could
no,
be
that one. Was the, oh no, I think it was the cat. Right. Cause the Debbie Harry was Tales from the Dark Side. Right. Dan Aykroyd was Twilight Zone.
Yeah. But the cat was not,
was a cat.
No,
there was Cat's Eye.
Yeah. Cat's Eye is what cat, the cat. Cat's from. Right.
That's the problem with these. That's the problem with these bite-sized anthology-type stories is real easy to get them flipped around.
Yeah.
But it's funny that the thing we're having the most problem remembering is the stitch-together story.
Right.
Yeah, and this one actually had, this stitch-together story was huge and animated.
Yeah, it was weird. A very weird animated thing that I don't remember. And this is why I don't think I've seen the second one. because I don't remember this animated stuff at all, but I'm vaguely aware of like the raft. I have some memory of that hitchhiker thing, but also the raft and the hitchhiker are kind of, you know, a million other things are like it. So that's probably why they seem familiar to me.
And there was some show like Saturday Night Live or Mad TV or something that had in a sketch a character saying thanks for the ride, lady, over and over.
Oh,
I don't know. I don't know what it was now, but it's in the deepest recesses of my memory, and I already had heard that line.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
This is the first time I'm watching Creepshow 2 for sure. Mm-hmm. But I like as soon as that guy said that, I'm like, oh right, thanks for the ride, lady.
By the way,
that is such a good part of it. Of the whole, if you don't watch anything else, you got
to
see.
You have to watch that part, and you also have to watch the part after he's so mangled, but just laying on her shoulder, going.
Yeah, a puppet with a movable tongue.
By the way, looking it up really quick, there were actually 5 segments in Creepshow 1 compared to the 3 in here. The stitched together story was a kid who got the Creepshow comic book from his dad, and his mom's like, "Oh, don't let him read that crap." And then he buys the.
I thought there was a quit smoking scene in that Creepshow.
That's Cat's Eye.
Dang it.
Yeah, it was with James Woods and a cat in an electrified electrified room, if I remember correctly.
But again, no blame here, because these things feel like they're all part of the same thing.
It's all Stephen King short stories, essentially.
And the funny thing is, if you jump to 2019, which we now exist in, there are, I think, at least 2 anthology shows happening concurrently that are Stephen King either connected and or created. So Hulu's got their, what's it called?
Dark Tower.
No, not Dark Tower. It's an anthology show, and it's called it's Castle Rock. There you go, Castle Rock.
That's an anthology show.
Yeah, and then that's another anthology show, and I'm speaking only anthology because there are a number of King projects in the works, like the Stand TV show and Dark Tower TV show and all that stuff, like Randy mentioned.
And right this minute, as we're recording, one of the top films at the movies for the last 3 weeks. Has been it too, and guys, it's 3 hours long.
Yeah,
right. It's a beast. I know, we're seeing it today, nice. Tina and I.
I want to go see it.
It's a beast. That's like that's like playing D&D, man. You're gonna be there forever.
Yeah,
man. I know. Well, don't 2 popcorn bucket. Is there an intermission?
Right. No, you need to make one though. What you want to do is get that app called P.
Run P.
Yeah,
you get that app and look at it, and you start its timer when the movie starts.
Since I saw almost the whole scene in the previews, can I just leave during the dancing naked grandma bit and go refill my popcorn?
Absolutely not. You got to witness that at the big screen. Actually,
full screen naked dancing grandma.
Yeah.
Actually, for the middle 90 minutes of the movie, you want to change screens and watch Good Boys and then come back to it.
Well, we kind of could have done that at the... at the drive-in a few weeks ago.
Going to almost watch it there, and then you guys changed.
Right, exactly. Yeah. It and Good Boys were both playing at the drive-in, and at one point during Good Boys, the only point at Good Boys where I looked away from the screen, I look over at the second drive-in screen, and it is the dancing grandma screen.
Scene. Why did I look now? Like,
perfect timing. Dancing grandma.
Why did I do it?
I want to really take a moment to underline the fact that the Stephen King book, It, which is one of his best books, in my opinion, maybe his best. I don't know. I've read them all. I've been told on Twitter that I'm not supposed to talk about ranking Stephen King books.
It's really hard not to do, but I understand
except
why.
Except the new one. The new one, The Institute. I've got it. I'm going to read it. I just haven't started yet. But how remarkable is it that the movies It, which need to be stitched together as one, 5-hour-long movie. That at like 2019.
Yeah,
this is where we've come.
It's weird. That's my whole circle. That's my whole point. We certainly dabbled in the 80s. This movie we're watching this week, Creepshow 2, is a good example of that. But you know, it was all kind of schlocky and terrible, not good versions of things. Once in a while, something like The Shining would come out, and you'd be like, "Oh, okay, here we go. This is cool."
It was more like his non-horror things were much better than his horror things, like Shawshank and Stand By Me.
Absolutely.
He's a great character writer, so I mean, it's good.
Yeah, and that's where he really shone in those times. But I think people really didn't have their heads around it. I think what happened is everybody who was a hardcore King fan in the day are now the people making TV, making film, making stuff, deals, making, you know, and now we're also in the streaming era where you can have two King anthology shows. Oh, I didn't mention the other one, which is Creepshow, showing on the Shudder Network. And apparently it's good. I'm looking at some reviews here, and people are raving about it.
And apparently, well, yeah, I watched it, and it is good conditionally.
Oh,
I think good-ish. We would say
goodish.
Conditionally, it's goodish. Yeah.
Tell me what you mean by that. What do you mean by goodish or conditionally?
Or conditional? Well, because if you have to really kind of be into that, you can't just pick anybody off the street and go, "We're gonna watch the Creep Show." It's not going to work for you. Mm-hmm. This is if you're really like into these kind of little short, you know, 20-minute shows where something weird happens and, you know, you got to park your brain at the door. This is good stuff.
Well, yeah, but that's what's so hot right now, because you got things like Black Mirror, which really in a lot of ways you could credit with the big comeback of an anthology show.
This, for sure.
And there's a bunch of others that aren't King related that people really like that are popping up everywhere. So we are really in a weird renaissance period of that. And
well, I'm enjoying it.
Ironically, the two big ones like Outer Limits and Twilight Zone. Those two are currently there is a new Twilight Zone, right? There's a new show.
Yeah, there is. Yeah.
There is. Yeah, the CBS one that Us and Get Out guy.
Do you think they ever bring, because they
Peele, Jordan Peele. Get Out Guy, Jordan Peele.
Get Out Guy.
And we fumbled around with this in other eras or other decades, where it was like in the 90s, you could get Outer Limits and there were, you know, the Tales from the Crypt and all that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. So it's not like we've ever really left, but it feels like it's a bit of a heyday right now. And I was wondering if we'd ever see, what's the Alfred Hitchcock one? Alfred Hitchcock Presents?
Alfred Hitchcock Presents, yeah.
Yeah. Wouldn't that be cool? I love those. Those were cool.
And I remember a few really good ones from the like the 80s or early 90s resurgence of those that that I thought were really cool.
Oh,
like
right.
There was a time that they brought those back too.
That's right.
And I can't remember if they were remakes of original ones that he'd written or if they were new ones specifically written for this. But yeah, we should bring those back too.
Wasn't Red Shoe Diaries was like a
stories.
Oh yeah, Amazing Stories would be great. Well, wait, yeah. I think that's happening over at the Apple stuff. Yeah, Spielberg.
That's right. Yeah,
yeah.
And what's cool is that they all have their thing, right? Black Mirror is like technology horror anthology, and Creepshow, I'm guessing with the Shudder thing, is more traditional horror. Oh, is it kind of fantasy horror?
Can I just stop you for a minute? Did anybody watching Creepshow 2 think about Black Mirror? Like, think about how,
not even once.
No.
I mean, I never did, other than in the category it's in. I did think of that because I wrote up my notes about, you know, this conversation we're having now, but not in a very direct way. Like, none of these seemed, there's something about the way that Black Mirror does it that is unique and I think is duly credited for making this take off again. Like, that stuff's amazing, I think.
Well, yeah, you get the feeling Charlie Booker wants this one conceit that is opposed to Stephen King, and that is, do not allow something to be supernatural.
Right.
Like, if it's gonna be supernatural, you just assume that it's normal in the universe that you put your story.
Right.
And so, like, that really separates them as writers.
Yeah.
Right? Because Stephen King is just like, I believe in a universe that's filled with hell and space demons, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but in the case of like Black Mirror is always rooting it in what if tech went here, or let's take something like, you know, social media today. Hey, what if 100 years from now it was the only currency if you liked people
it's worst case scenario stuff, right? It's like, what's going to be the worst case scenario with this technology? Oh, this is bad.
Yeah, and it's smart because it makes us go, oh, yeah, I can relate to this because I understand social networking today and I can see the through line you've made here to what it could be. Or what constant camera exposure means to the human race over time, or, you know, whatever it is. Those are really fun thought experiments that we can relate to because we're in part of it now. And so it plays with our expectations. It's great.
And there's also a content discussion, right? Stephen King is in this rarefied strata of writers who want to gross you out. They want to find a moment where you go, ooh, it's so gross what I've just read or what I've just seen. Mm-hmm. And that right there, that's not something that everybody does.
No.
Like the raft sequence that made by other people, like written by other people, does not have all of the grossness that this one does. And it actually elevates it, at least in that particular case.
I agree.
I don't think Chief Woodenhead Old Chief Woodenhead.
Yeah,
Old Chief
Woodenhead. That reminded me of Amazing Stories. That was Amazing Stories up and down.
But I don't think that one is necessarily elevated by the gross out moments. Right. It's just
No, I mean it almost felt, well, whatever. I mostly laughed through that one, that whole thing, because it's just dumb. Mm-hmm. Like it's
right. And you know, I don't necessarily think that Stephen King tries to gross you out. I think that he
I think
it's more of he approaches life, it almost makes it very raw, because I mean most of the things that happen that are toilet humor or that kind of thing is rooted in a different place. It's not like, oh, I'm gonna try to gross you out. It's more like, you've probably never thought about this, but mm-hmm. you know, and that's kind of
he likes what ifs, and then he likes to take him to the extreme. Like, what if what if you died, or what if you're doing it with your husband that you don't really like, and then he dies in the middle of it?
Right.
But
you're tied up to the bed.
Yeah, you're handcuffed to the bed. What do you do? And then, like, he does that so often. The Stand is, while, you know, peppered with supernatural elements later in the book, The Stand is all about, what if a giant virus wiped everybody out? And at the time he wrote that was still a kind of a new idea. And so then you just start building on that. Oh, well, then this would happen. But then that would happen. Like, here's where the dominoes will fall. And what he does do, to Randy's point, I think, is in those scenarios, he will then find ways of saying, well, if this happened, then this horrible thing would happen. And look at this then, horrible thing.
We're going to talk about it.
Right.
And he's like, and we're going to talk about it.
Right.
And that's what I think.
Yeah.
That's pretty much what he said.
Yeah.
In one of those interviews that I watched to kind of get his voice and his mannerisms for this, was like him talking. It was a Charlie Rose interview from 1993, and him talking about, yeah, you know, there's a difference for me between suspense and horror. And people describe me as a horror writer, and I feel like I'm more of a suspense writer. Horror is what you do with your sister at the table when you have a big mouthful of mashed potatoes and gravy, and you open your mouth while it's filled with that stuff. That's horror. Whereas suspense is waiting for it to happen.
Wow, that's the example he used. That's hilarious.
Well, I'm extrapolating. He talks about the opening your mouth with the food and it is horror, but he doesn't extrapolate it to the waiting for it as a suspense. He just says that I'm more of a suspense writer. But
yeah, I think in a lot of ways that's true. I mean, my favorite King stuff is not the horror stories, although I agree that It is one of his best books. I think there's plenty of
We got to talk about this.
Sure.
Because it's, you know, thanks to Twitter, it's been on my mind. So, can you name the Stephen King book or books that let you down so bad?
Oh, like, let me down?
Oh, like, let me down. Huh.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't. I mean, my favorite two books in the world are the Dark Tower series, and my favorite standalone book. It's probably tied with American Gods, but it's close, is The Stand. So I know I love those. So on the other end, what would those be? Oh man.
Well, yeah, and that's the problem.
That let me down.
Yeah, I don't think I have
really,
either.
To really set this, like I say, I've read them all. To really set this, you got to understand my favorite book of all time. Like, if you told me, hey, you've got about 18 hours to live, you want to sit here and read a book, I would read the middle 80% of Wizard and Glass, because it's so good.
Yeah, it's really good.
Because of that, and because Stephen King has also done so many, like the book Rita Hayworth and Shawshank Redemption is better than the movie. I'm telling you, it's like, because of that, he's made such great produce of his writing. The other books, every now and then, I just remember, like, growing up, so you'd hear, oh, there's a new Stephen King book coming out, and it's called Bag of Bones, and you're like, yeah, and then you see it at what was the bookstore in the mall,
Walden Books. Yeah.
Walden Books. You see it, and it's on this display out, big, huge cover on cardboard, and you're like, yeah, Bag of Bones.
Yeah.
And then you get that. And I personally experienced that so many times with Rose Matter and The Girl Who Loved Tom Gordon and Dolores Claiborne and these books. Like, you keep coming back and giving it a chance, and they just suck.
Rose Matter was not great. I'll give you, you know what? Probably that's my least favorite, but there's one that no one likes that I really like, which is The Cell, or just Cell, rather.
It's just Cell. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's the one about cell phones suddenly emit a code that if you were listening to it at the right moment, you became a deranged zombie and just murdered whoever was ever in front of you, eviscerated them. there's something about that book I totally dig on. And I think it's a throwaway idea. It's one of his, like, what if this happened where the phones did a thing?
Like, oh, my God. George Lucas is suddenly here.
Yeah, but it definitely is one of those, you know, chuck it. It feels like a creep show idea. Like, honestly, it feels like a short whatever. And it kind of is, but it's a full novel. But I like it anyway. And I think I'm that way with pretty much all his stuff, even the bad endings to, like, things like Tommyknockers or Needful Things had a crappy ending. And he's known for his crappy endings, right? Like, he's not great at his endings.
I mean, yes and no, right? Like, the ending, and now I'm talking movies, the endings of movies like Misery or The Green Mile or Shawshank Redemption are fantastic. And yeah, you have to credit Stephen King, right?
Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm. It's weird that those short stories, Richard Bachman stuff that ended up making serious Oscar contender style movies, have these really strong endings, and the stuff with, like, lots of, you know, fantasy fiction and supernatural elements don't necessarily land kind of stick flat, those landings. Right? Yeah, it's weird. The worst ending I ever read was in The Dome, and I loved The Dome up until the end, but everything else. Past that,
I've got Under the Dome right here next to my bed. I'm reading it right now.
Okay, let me just say this to you, Brian. This is not a spoiler or anything.
At page 294.
When you get there, oh, that book's way bigger than that. But when you get there, you tell me, because maybe it's been too long and I don't have the right attitude about it. Maybe it was better ending than I thought. But I loved that book up to the ending. I loved it. And I'd read it again based on just the rest of the story, because I thought it was great.
As I've gotten older and the more Stephen King I've read over the years, I'm okay with taking a journey with him, even if the ending doesn't happen where I want it to happen, or if it's not as fulfilling, because it's always the journey for me with Stephen King, and just in getting in the car with him and just riding and him pointing out stuff. I'm like, yeah, that's cool, man.
Yeah.
There's
a bit of that. Sure. There's a quality to him that I like, and I kind of wish his kids had it. I like Joe Hill's books a lot, and I like the other, he actually used the King name. I forgot his name, the other brother.
Yeah. They wrote a couple things together too.
Didn't they? They're really good. Like Lock and Key, which is a comic, but that graphic novel is one of the greatest things I ever read. That was a Joe Hill joint, but I also read a few of his books. And sorry, the one thing that they miss or they don't have is that feeling of I'm being taken on a ride and I'm about to be shown wacky stuff. And there's something about Stephen King's work that does that. And it's hard to quantify. I don't even know how to define it, but I love it.
When you read his book on writing, you guys read his book on writing?
No, I keep meaning to. No.
Yes, I have.
Good book. It's a good book. I enjoy it.
Yeah.
He's just so prolific. It's just really hard to imagine.
Yeah. Like, that's the thing. This is like the eighth or ninth Stephen King written or inspired movie we've watched on FilmSack. It's incredible.
Yeah.
Like, when you start thinking about, we watched Thinner, we watched Maximum Overdrive, we watched The Running Man. Like, right. I mean, it's just like,
forget that that's weird.
Yeah, and it's that's just like joint. So many things that you can't avoid Stephen King, and like, of course, some of them are going to be better than others.
Yeah, he deserves it. And like, if they ever do a Rushmore for like most influential creators of the, let's say, the 70s through the 2000s, his head's in there. It's got to be.
Oh, yeah.
Right? You got him and Spielberg and Lucas.
His big, ugly head and those weird-looking glasses.
Yeah.
He's in there.
He's in there going, I'm going to put myself in my fifth Dark Tower book.
What
do you think of that?
I didn't recognize him. I've seen this movie before, and I didn't even recognize him at first as the truck driver, because he wasn't wearing his big, you know, giant glasses.
And right. And these days.
And those things are thick, too.
Yeah.
That's one thing I just kept getting distracted by in his interviews.
Yeah.
Just like me, he's blind.
He's very, and he's the way he looks today, I really like his look today. It just looks like this chiseled, weird looking, aging writer dude that looks a little crazy, but also.
Right,
kind of grandfatherish. I think he's awesome.
I love his tweets, by the way. He is so much fun to watch.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. He's a good Twitter follower.
It's a lot of fun.
Does he know how to end his tweets?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. No, they're always terrible cliffhangers and bad resolution.
Dot dot dot.
That twist is 280 characters.
Yeah. Right. he really hates Trump. So if you're okay with a few tweets
fine.
Like
you
that,
you can hate Trump, love Trump. I don't care. I just enjoy his entertaining.
No, that's what I'm saying, though. Sure. If you can deal with a few tweets like that one direction or the other, then you'll be all right.
Right. He always keeps it entertaining.
He's a good follower.
I forget what I was going to say. I was trying to remember, because he was talking during Creepshow, when in his little cameo, he was talking about, people, you would be surprised how often people get hit. And I was like, was this before he got hit?
Definitely before. It happened in 90. Oh, happened wow. in 99. So yeah, I wrote that down too.
Like, oh, foreshadowing.
So in 99, he got hit by that van while he was out walking and almost quit riding altogether. Got hooked on painkillers for a while. He ended up, there's a really good Fresh Air interview that where all this stuff gets talked about 2001 or two. But anyway, then he returns to writing. He writes himself into that fifth, I think it was the fifth novel for the Dark Tower series, which really rubbed a lot of people wrong. But they had
Wolves of the Cala?
Yeah, Wolves of the Cala, I think, where he gets hit by the van and he's in it. And the Roland and those guys have to go find this Psy King who is, you know, supposedly this clairvoyant in the modern world. And it's kind of a terrible idea. And I don't know why he did it. But anyway, but yeah, when I saw that scene, I went, oh, this is all just a little too on the nose. Yeah,
like, I felt like he was winking and nodding it to the camera. It's like, wink, wink, happens all the time.
Yeah,
wink,
but this was like 20 years before that would happen or more.
Yeah.
So it's crazy. Yeah, I thought that was nuts because that was 99. Yeah, he got hit in 99 is what it was.
Wow. Is that late along? Yeah, I guess it was.
It was pretty late. 2 years
later.
Yeah, and it messed him up pretty bad. Almost killed him. So, yeah.
Right. So did anybody recognize any actors in this film that was just like, oh my gosh, I can't believe Tom Savini is the creep.
Well, didn't recognize Tom Savini, but George Kennedy, of course, from all the police squad.
I love him. I love George Kennedy.
Yeah, I do too. Yeah.
I found it really, really hard to watch a young Bill Tench from Mindhunter with long, straight black hair.
Wait a minute.
I just couldn't take that.
Stop for a second. That's not who that is.
Yeah. What, the Native American kid? The Sam? Sam?
Oh my gosh. Are you kidding?
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Dude, I think about Bill Tench at least twice a day, the character.
I know. And there he was right in front of you.
I'm going to Hollywood.
To be Native. This very like Irish, Scottish, I don't know what his background is, but you know. He is absolutely not Native American or anything like the actor.
Okay, I'm looking at it now. You're right. I cannot believe he is Sam Whitemoon. That's crazy to me. Sorry, I'm a little bowled over here. That just blows my mind. Wow. All right.
And like
as it should.
Like despite that complaint that they had no business casting this blue-eyed, very pale European actor. In this role, he does a good job. Like he's scary. He's got an amazing stomach.
He's an A-hole.
Yeah, right. He shows it off too, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, totally.
I had no idea that was him. I mean, I think he is the greatest thing on Netflix right now. I love that guy, but I didn't know that was him. And he's so thin. Well, and Bill Tench today.
He's also in Fight Club and Alien 3 too. Wow.
Yeah those are really, I actually went and looked at these while watching this movie last night. I was like, he was in Fight Club. It's like, it's not much of a role. He barely appears in Fight Club.
Okay.
Yeah.
In fact, I would actually say Mindhunter is the first real big success for him. Like, as an actor, he's worked hard on a lot of crap.
Yeah, he deserves it. And he's the I don't think he was even supposed to be in the beginning of Mindhunter. He has become, as far as I'm concerned, the character that I want to follow. He is just so interesting and has such a great arc. I know you haven't watched that show yet, but when you do, you're just going to freaking love it.
I might actually do it next. I started watching something last night that I was just having a hard time getting into, so I might jump over to that.
That's just nuts to me. That's him.
Once I saw through the wig and saw, you know, Bill Tench in there like 30 years ago, I couldn't take it seriously. That whole sequence in the store.
I just couldn't. Well, I had a hard time taking it serious anyway, and I didn't know. So it's, you know, fair enough, I guess. But he is an interesting dude. Now I'm gonna go down some other rabbit holes after the show today because I want to know
The original question was there someone who jumped out for you? Yeah. And yes, absolutely, there it is.
Right.
There's a lot of people in this film who fit their role perfectly, and I've never heard of them or seen them before. And I was just like all of the teenagers in the raft sequence, I thought they were all perfect for their roles.
Yeah, they were pretty good. Know, do you guys like it when someone in the movie we watch has one of our names? I love that there was a guy named Randy.
Oh my god, so much Randy yelling in that scene.
Yeah,
this was 87, and we really like to use the word Randy for meaning that you were Randy.
Yeah, they horny. Were horny. Right. Yeah, so, that was a thing. Also,
he looked up his name.
Gosh dang it. Can we talk about him for a second? That really annoyed me. So the Raft one is arguably the most horror movie of the three and is pretty good. I mean, it's cheesy, but it's gory and it's fun and whatever. But it's somehow, I don't know, it stood out for me over the others. But anyway, this Randy character, who the other dude, Dean, kept calling Poncho, which was a reference to the Poncho character from the TV show that the fat guy was watching. Yeah, the Cisco Kid thing.
Anyway, everywhere. It was everywhere.
Yeah, it was a weird, that was a weird throughput, I thought. But anyway, whatever.
Yeah.
Was there a reference to it in The Hitchhiker, by the way? I know there was one.
No, there wasn't. I don't think
so. Yeah. Okay. As far as I know, which is
weirder. Which is, I was like, what was the point?
Yeah. Why? If you're going to carry it through to two of the stories, why not carry it to the third one?
Right.
As well?
I like that idea, even when it makes no sense, but they stopped it too. And that doesn't make sense. Yeah. But anyway, so the point is he's out there and it's all, to me, all the things are happening that are supposed to in that entire sequence. People are dying the way they're supposed to. They're afraid to leave like they're supposed to. They stay there all night like they're supposed to. Like, they're doing horror stuff. But when he wakes up in the morning after the coldest night of his life, where the actor, by the way, according to the trivia, almost died from hypothermia and they had to extend it a day for filming. He wakes up and the first thing he thinks of is, let's lay her out while she's asleep and let's see if I can't get a little macking going on. And get a little booby action going before the return of the freaking plastic carpet or whatever.
And that's all Stephen King right there. Stephen King cannot have a character just be, you know, like a normal person. Like, Stephen King has to stop and say, it's a horny teenager. I
disagree.
You are a rapist.
Okay. All right.
Because the first girl that dies is kind of like the nice one of the four, right? Like, she's like, you know,
she's killed off instantly.
She is. And it seems like, all right, if you're following the trope, and everything else about the Raft follows the trope, except the twist is that there's really no twist. Okay, there's a no swimming sign.
Oh,
really?
Dang.
That's the reveal? have an overturned nuclear waste barrel or something on the side in the, you know, overgrown in the bushes or something.
That's been done so
many
times.
But it would have worked better. I agree, but it worked better.
It's better than no swimming. Like, somebody said, oh, I've got a big deadly garbage bag in the middle of my lake. I better put up a no swimming sign.
I mean, we call it a garbage bag. To their credit, they were trying to create what was like an oil slick, but it just looked like a garbage bag.
Say it was an oil slick. I'm like, that's no oil slick.
Yeah, but there were moments it looked okay, but whatever.
You know, the trope is that the person who's kind of got the good heart is the one who kind of gets to escape at the end.
Yeah.
And to kill her off first for like, oh, wow, okay, she and Randy went off and did like humanitarian work where they clean birds off from an oil slick and all that. Wow, okay, I guess they're probably going to be the ones who survive. Nope, she's going to make a run or make a swim for it. And
is that what happened? She just get yanked in. I can't remember what happened.
No, she got yanked in because she wanted to touch the.
Because she just started getting high, which made no sense because in the car she's like, "No, thank you, no pot.
Yeah.
All you party animals are crazy."
Yeah.
But then when she gets out on the raft, she's all like, "Hey, Deke, give me some of that smoke." And so then she hits it a couple of times and she starts walking over and starts poking at the thing. I'm like, what is going on? What
she's all booger. She's all boogering down there with her finger. And I'm thinking, oh yeah, that'll turn out great for you. You're going to do real good. But then but his whole thing in the middle with him assaulting the sleeping girl.
Yes. Right.
Is molesting, the most out of context, out of nowhere. Right. No one's doing that ever in this context.
No.
It's not happening.
Like, oh my gosh, I'll keep you warm, no problem. And this is the scariest thing that's ever happened. Well, hopefully somebody will come. By the way, while you're asleep, I'm going to see if I can grab a boob.
Yeah, let's get a little action going on. He's like,
and how hard is she sleeping? Because
no kidding.
Well, and then, you know, it's his fault because now her face is on the wood, and out comes the goop and gets right on her face, and that was the end of that. And she really got it back because by the end she was just a skeleton head floating out there, which is pretty
still
cool.
Yelling. Ready.
So there was fun to be had with that segment, but I just hated the horny bit because it made no sense to me. Like, that's just
out of
context.
And they could have done so much. Have some bones and stuff in the floating around in the muck, right? Like, have it so that, like, they might be able to figure out what's going on and have a little bit of foreshadowing if that duck that gets killed or the loon or whatever it is that gets killed while they're swimming out there. You see its bones kind of resting on. It's like, oh, all right, this thing's kind of evil.
What if that reveal tracking shot at the very end kept going over to the area where the oil slick poops all the bones into a pile.
That would have been, okay. That would have been,
and it was just like hidden around a little bend, so they couldn't have ever seen it.
Yeah.
Or like, or the oil slick. Like,
yeah.
Or it gets out and it drives the Camaro away so that another group of teenagers can show up and not be.
No, that thing had to be dead. There's no way the radio plays all night. Nobody's that hard.
It's the same song. It's like they bought a CD or a cassette single,
Right.
Yeah. That had one song on it, had it on auto reverse. And
and it was some bad Foreigner ripoff band. It wasn't even a good band. But the it was one of the things I kept thinking about is that poor radio, like that battery's going to die. But no, somehow, supernaturally, the battery's just fine after all that time.
Right. 1978 Camaro with a bra on the tip. That was weird.
It's pretty hot.
I really enjoyed the cars in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
I want to talk about them for some reason. I don't know why.
You can totally talk about the Mercedes in here too.
I mean, they make a point to show you the cars pretty seriously.
And they talk about them a lot.
I guess Stephen King loves cars. He's said that several times. The real standout is the Pontiac Fleet Leader that is described as a limousine. I thought that was really funny.
Yeah.
That's a early 50s Pontiac, and that thing according to the trivia actually overheated the shooting of the movie.
Bet you it could
see it happening.
Yeah, I could feel it just looking at it. It's funny is he likes cars. Stephen King likes cars. He just doesn't like vans, weirdly. I don't know what that's about. Doesn't like the 1999 vans. Weird.
Not a fan of the vans.
So we haven't. Oh, there's so much. This is a problem with these anthology movies because there's so much to say about each one of these. And in clips today, you guys are going to hear so much. There's so much in here, but most of it comes from one and two. Third one, there's not a lot of stuff. There's some, but there's not a lot.
A lot of Annie talking to herself.
Yeah, right. That's the only way you can do something like that and have dialogue is you know, Annie saying, "All right, well, there's another $2,000 repair. Annie. Way to go. That looked like it just drove off a lot." I kept waiting for her to, like, keep figuring out how much all these things cost by the orgasm. Like, oh, great, okay.
Well, that's bumper what I was saying before, too.
It's about $1,400, which is still about $212 per orgasm.
Yeah, I kept waiting for that too because I was like, okay, we're doing a lot of math during this episode or during this segment. Right. And I'm like, okay, so the orgasms we specify those are $25 a pop, or really that's not the right math. She paid more than that. Maybe she left a tip. Anywho, at the end, she kept trying to throw like money at the hey lady, thanks for the ride. She was throwing money. Can I give you a 20? 50? I'm like, well, how many orgasms do you want, lady? I mean, I wasn't sure what the math was all about.
Does she have a handbag, or does she just have like a little sack full of wadded up bills?
This is a great question, also, but I still don't know. I mean, you guys can tell me what you think, but I'm still not 100% sure that guy she hit existed. I wonder if that whole segment, did he?
Every story like these, right? It's all, and this is actually a trope. So give me a trope.
Hey, we haven't played one yet, and there've been a ton already, so we should probably.
Karma's gonna kill you, and every one of these stories is about people doing something bad, and karma immediately just bludgeons them. Right. But the first and third are the good ones, right? So, like, yes, if you murder a nice old couple in their general store, karma comes and kills you very, very quickly, and yes. If you, I guess, are spending your husband's money on a prostitute dude, karma comes and gets you pretty quick. But the middle story, I'm not exactly following what the huge crime was that these kids committed.
I think it's like this adult saying, "Oh, was it drugs? They're doing drugs and they're being lascivious."
It's morality tales, right? Yeah. It's our fairy tales. Which is where most of these come from. This is why I consider most of this fantasy.
Okay, so karma's killing them for doing pot and for trying to have sex on a lake.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Because that's what you used to do. You used to tell kids, it's like, oh, you don't want to do that because then you get involved with this and then karma's going to get
you. Next thing you know.
Yeah, it's for being rebellious teenagers. Like, it's the oldest crime in time. But all the adults, all the old fuddies think that they're up to no good, that sort of thing.
And it's super, super common. And it's also very common in Stephen King stories. Like, it's like, this is a trope that just, it's everywhere.
Oh, it just keeps on giving.
Since I mentioned The Running Man earlier, I just love how that movie it has this trope over and over.
Yeah,
like people keep getting killed by karma as soon as they're revealed to be a bad guy.
I gotta watch The Running Man again. I enjoy that movie.
Mm-hmm.
Just on the face of it. Yeah, I do.
Is that ripe for a remake like It and Pet Sematary? Like, do we need a Running Man remake?
I can see that, but you'd have to have, instead of Richard Dawson, you'd have to have old who'd have
Drew Carey. How about Drew Carey?
Jeff Probst. Drew Carey, dude.
He would be amazing.
Our Probst would be good.
All right, make sure to spay and neuter your pets and
I mean, there's something about that that kind of works because he's got that kind of jolly, happy persona, but then behind the scenes, you could turn him into a real a-hole.
Right. Yeah. Because I mean, Richard Dawson, you know, totally did the whole "I'm a dick behind the scenes" kind of thing.
Yeah.
What do you guys make of this broad cultural backlash toward remakes that is paradoxically married to a lot of people spending a lot of money to watch remakes?
I think it's the dumbest thing ever because who cares? Like, there's two notions that are just complete bunk. One is that you're going to destroy my childhood by remaking a thing. F that. Who cares? It doesn't change the original thing. If you still like that, better go watch that. You can never see the new thing if you don't want to. If you think Ghostbusters was ruined by a bunch of ladies, you're just, I can't help you. But
yeah, that was a stupid argument.
I have no problem. I mean, I have no problem telling you when I think a remake is bad, but I have no problem with them making the effort. And also sequels that are way late. Like, this Matrix 4 news is super stoking for me. I'm jazzed. Why? Because it could be cool. Could it be terrible? Absolutely. But what's the problem? Go ahead. Make your thing.
I mean, I hear you, but you saw the reaction to some random person mentioning that someone could remake The Princess Bride. The reaction was insane.
I mean, that's a movie.
It was really kind of charming. So, I mean, I can't.
That's a tough thing, right? Because we can talk all day about, like, oh, it'd be really cool to remake Running Man or remake RoboCop, or I guess they kind of did remake RoboCop, but remaking a lot of these things from the 80s. But that one does feel like holy ground. It feels like an untouchable thing.
And since you can access that feeling, you can kind of understand why some people have other holy ground.
But to me, it's not holy. To me, it will never be holy ground. It's holy ground unto itself, and it can still be enjoyed in that way. But if somebody remakes The Princess Bride, all right. I mean, it may be terrible. It may be good. I don't know. But I don't understand how
it ruined the, whether it's good or bad, it doesn't have any effect on what on how our enjoyment of the original.
Right. This is the same way I feel
about it. Just to pick up a movie at random that I think is great and doesn't need to be remade. If someone said, we're going to make a new Raising Arizona, I would be like, at first I would be like, yeah, I don't need to see that. I've got Raising Arizona, but I would go see it. And that's the weird thing. I would go spend the money. Yeah. I don't know why.
That's the paradox. That's the paradox you're talking about. Because we're all going to see it, you know?
Is the remake success hinged on the how much of the film is about the story versus how much is the people in it? For example, Point Break, right? They try and remake Point Break, but without Keanu Reeves and without
dead guy.
Baby in the corner.
Patrick Swayze is who you're
digging for. Patrick Swayze, he will ruin your ceramic, your clay pottery.
Right,
exactly. But without those two, I mean, it really, Point Break isn't about the story as much as it's about those two actors, and that's what makes the first one so beloved. I think that might be the case with Princess Bride. That's not necessarily the case with what's an example of something that got remade that's actually, you know, the remake is actually pretty good.
Let me give you an example that is the primest and best and biggest example of all time to ever be known by mankind, and that would be the essential retelling and rebooting of a little franchise known as Mad Max. They called it Fury Road.
Oh my God. How did I not see that coming?
I didn't either. I should have heard the engine revving from a mile away.
I remember people in like 2011 through 2013 or so going, oh no, what are you doing? This is a bad idea. I don't care if it is George Miller. I don't care who, blah, blah, blah. Like, people were freaking out. The casting made everybody mad, all this stuff. And then it comes out and it's the best damn thing they ever did with that franchise. 100% up and down. It's very hard to make an argument against that. So it can happen. And that's why my attitude is, go for it. Let's see if you can pull it off. And if you can't,
It happens all the time in certain genres. I just want to point out, Westerns modern version took a sort of middling older film, found what was great in it, and you know, became an exemplary part of the forum. Like
three
we were
tens,
talking
like
about
that.
Westerns. Yeah. We were talking about Westerns before the show, mm-hmm. and we discovered that Brian Ibbett has never seen one of the five best modern Westerns. And by the way, the five best modern Westerns, this is just my opinion, okay. are Unforgiven, 310 to Yuma, Open Range, Dances with Wolves, and Tombstone.
Yeah.
Just my opinion.
Fair enough. I would maybe sneak Silverado in there, but I have a soft spot for that thing. So
310 to Yuma is a remake.
Yeah.
You know,
of not a great sixties era Western that wasn't that great. There's not too much remarkable about it, except they, like you said, they pulled the points that mattered and made a better movie. Yeah.
Yes. And the 2007 film is fantastic. Mm-hmm. Top five modern Westerns.
True Grit. You got to stick True Grit in there, I'd say. Mm-hmm. I know that's controversial. Some people love the first one, but I think that True Grit remake from the Coen Brothers is
True Grit.
Really
yeah.
good. Yeah.
But, anyway, you need to watch Open Range, Brian Ibbett.
Oh, it's so good.
I wish it was, I really wish it was streaming. I'd actually put it on the list to watch this week, but might have to, maybe I'll rent it. Might be worth spending the $3.99 to rent it.
I'll tell you what, I have seen it streaming a couple times over the last decade we've been doing this. I will make sure that we sack it if we get a chance, because that's one of those I would just love to
Ooh,
talk to you.
Is it, but is it sackable?
It's a weird one, because it is one of the best five modern Westerns made. It's in my top three probably, but it has lots of material that we could talk about, I think.
Okay.
Oh yeah. I would love to hear clips from Open Range with Michael Jeter and, Robert Duvall has so many great lines in that film.
Then I will wait. I'll give it some time. When I see it streaming, I won't say, oh, let me watch this. I'll say, all right, let's sack it.
Yeah.
All right.
All right. Fair enough.
Coming soon ish.
Yeah. It's a hell of a thing. So, all right, man, this is a hard one to sack because there's so much here. Let me give you some trivia. This is fun stuff. I talked about Daniel Beer earlier. He's the Randy character from The Raft. He almost died from hypothermia. The water was so cold, his body turned green. The crew wanted him to continue acting, but director Michael McCormick said, can't do it. He'll die. And so he went to a hospital, made full recovery, and everything was fine. Here's my favorite bit of trivia. Barbara Eden. This is before I get to our film sack trolls out there who are doing yeoman's amazing work this month, by the way.
I love your emphasis on the name. Say that name like that again.
Like Barbara Eden?
You didn't emphasize it.
Barbara Eden was originally cast as the hit-and-run driver Annie Lansing during the last segment, The Hitchhiker, but had to drop out prior to filming due to her mother falling ill. So we almost had the genie.
All right. We get Bond girl Lois Chiles. I'm totally fine with that.
And she was good. She was great.
I thought she was fun.
Yeah.
I love when she was talking to herself. Yeah. I love when she called herself. I think I said, you're seeing things, bitch. You can't live with it.
Right.
Exactly. I captured that. We'll play that later.
You know, talking about her husband. Oh, you know, punctual Frank, always going to be there at 11:30.
No, he was out.
Not 11:29.
Yeah, he couldn't be because he was busy meeting with Stephen King and talking about the hit and run.
Yep. This is all true.
Okay, so okay. Best Bond girl name of all time, Brian Ibbett?
Oh, Pussy Galore, come on.
Yeah, kind of have to say that.
I guess you're right.
There's no comparison, right? It's the worst movie.
What were you going to say? Like Christmas Jones? Or,
because this actress played Holly Goodhead.
Goodhead.
That's pretty good.
Moonraker. It's not as good as Pussy Galore. Sorry. That's
right.
Yeah. That's what everybody thought being a secret agent would provide for you.
Yeah.
Is Pussy Galore.
Yeah.
Yes, but Pussy isn't a first name. I'm sorry.
Shouldn't be, but there it is. There it is.
The world would be a better place if it was.
Right. Now, I hated the soundtrack in this movie, but I had a note here that I wanted to show to Ibbett because maybe he knows who this is or knows more than we do.
Okay.
But much of the soundtrack was performed by legendary keyboardist Rick Wakeman from the English band Yes.
So yeah, Rick Wakeman. Really?
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't catch that.
I
must not have lasted through the credits.
His style did not come through though, or whatever.
No, really didn't.
The style of Yes, I should say, but in fact, I kind of hated it. I captured a few bits I'll play later that I really disliked, so you guys can hear that. Here are the people who are. After further scrutiny, I have learned are our people. Okay, these are our people doing the good work on the IMDb. Number one, right. This is so timely. It's literally since we last spoke, someone went in there and put Nicolas Cage was originally considered for the role of the creep.
Oh, that has to be good.
Really?
Yep, I love it. Not a chance. That's true. And that's totally our people.
Four people found this interesting. Yep. I can tell you they are.
And then the topping thing here is, again, one of our people put in there, Arnold Schwarzenegger was considered for the role of Old Chief Woodenhead.
those wooden abs are pretty tight.
Oh man,
it's gonna be. I hope that no one gets wise to this, and you know, the IMDb folks, because I'd hate for it to happen like YouTube, where all of a sudden, you know, you can lock, or you have to have a special kind of login to be able to edit or something.
Right, and I think you may already do. I just don't know. I don't know how that actually works. If you submit something, you have to have an account. And do they flag you if you keep putting
right exactly
stuff?
Does it get tied to your name and all of a sudden it's like, all right, well, Larry Fredericks just put up another thing about Nicolas Cage being considered for the role.
Gotta keep going though, guys, so keep it
a
up
creep. I love it.
We're behind you 100%. Keep it up, don't stop. We want to know. Boy, next week, yeah,
I tell you what, the voice of the creep sure sounded like Clancy Brown to me. I know it was you know, it sounds more like current Clancy Brown than
right. There's two credits in the for that. Joe Silver does the creep voice apparently at some point in time, and then Tom Savini does the prologue.
Okay.
Well, Tom Savini's the one in the rubber suit.
In the mask, yeah.
Yeah. And
he may not be doing the actual voice.
Oh, good point.
I thought the voice changed at some point, and I was like, that sounds different.
How do we know him? What are we supposed to know Tom Savini from?
From Dusk Till Dawn. He's the he's a special effects guy, makeup guy, big time. We've seen his work in a bunch of things, but the only time we've seen him on screen, he was one of the guys. It was him and the black guy that were in the. They were kind of like the guys who knew what was going on and understood what was going on in From Dusk Till Dawn. Like they were more prepared for it to turn into Vampire Town. At the
okay, yeah, now Dusk. I remember that. By the way, has anyone seen that series, Dusk Till Dawn? I heard that was good. Speaking of things that were remade or whatever, I hear that's actually pretty solid. It's it's on that Rodriguez channel. He made his own channel or whatever.
I love his channel.
Really?
Yeah.
El Rey Network.
Yeah, El Rey. Is it El Rey? El Rey.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's full of like super action-y Tarantino Rodriguez style stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, they have like a theme. Saturdays where they do all kinds of just, you know, one week it may be kung fu or one week it may be something else, and you just, it's just fun. And
it's,
they've got like
cool,
a lot
yeah.
of it's like cool. all day just like in between, like behind the scenes kind of things. It's, mm-hmm. it's good. I like it.
Yeah, no, it's super cool actually. I don't have TV, so I don't see it very often, but I noticed that was on Netflix now. It might be worth checking out. I wrote down here, I liked George Kennedy a lot. That guy had a cool career. Although this is a weird thing. Oh, and the Indian uncle that comes at the end, the Native American uncle, rich uncle, shows up at the end. He's like thanking the big wooden thing and knows what happened there to his nephew. But at the same time, I'm like, dude, there are bodies in there. Go in there.
I think the twist at the end of that one was the fact that he was the mastermind behind everything that was going on.
Really?
The uncle was?
Yeah, I think he was very gangsta about the whole thing because he was killing all of his enemies.
Yeah, but the old people shouldn't have gotten killed in that. That was
I didn't say it was fact. That's just, I like to think. I like to think.
It would have. I would have appreciated it if they depicted something like that. Like if they had depicted the older man
would've
communicating
like
with Chief Woodenhead.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, they're
like if he walked by and threw some paint or something on him, like it's like and gave him the warrior paint or something.
When it came to life, and he goes, I was laughing so hard. Oh, I loved that moment. I laughed and laughed. I thought that was great. Okay.
Yeah,
sorry, go ahead.
I just want to say one thing about that, like as pure writing and depiction. Like I didn't grow up really close to Indian country, but I definitely for a long time and in the 80s and 90s, I intersected with plenty of people coming on or off reservations. They never ever wore headbands, guys. I'm sorry. I just, it is just like, I see these guys get out of a car. They're wearing headbands and a feather.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, what are you doing?
It's
Hollywood?
Pretty, it's
that is
pretty dumb.
Wrong.
Yeah. It's pretty dumb. They don't handle that stuff right. Well, again, Bill Tench is playing this Indian kid. Like, I knew something was up. Like, I could tell that I'm like, eh, it doesn't look like a he was born. You know, this is, seems racially weird. But then now that you've said it, I'm like, oh, yeah, they didn't care at all. Top to bottom.
First.
Yeah.
Yeah. The first sequence is just it's racially bad. It's just like bad. It yeah. like I think there's maybe one actor in the whole thing. You know, mm-hmm. that belongs to be playing the role.
Yep.
I'm pretty sure the older White Moon man was played by someone who's Hispanic, which, I mean, it's closer than Bill Tench, but sure. I don't know. It was weird. It's just sad.
Very weird. I think they could have done better. How about this? Check this out.
Get up here and grab a bucket.
All right. Checking a bucket. I found a bucket clip. So
nice.
Here's the chicken in the bucket for me is everybody who was hanging out with Stephen King when they got to the scene of the crime. They all just were there for no reason. Yeah, they were there to confirm the death and then make a cameo. And then that guy calls his wife and the lady says, what's up? And that's it. They're done. Mm-hmm. Out. No mm-hmm. more of that. And I thought for blood sure we'd get some follow up, but we didn't get anything.
Are you talking about the ones who found?
Yes.
Found the body.
Yeah.
Oh, right. But wasn't that her husband who found the body? Oh. Didn't he like show up at the house later? Wasn't that?
Wait
him?
A minute. That's
I was
the
wondering
same
if
guy?
That was the case, because that would be at least late, a little tiny bit of a twist.
Oh, I didn't realize that was him.
You know,
is it him?
I think it like was. I put it together like that. It looked like the same guy, but maybe also, all white, maybe all rich white guys look the same to me. I don't know.
Yeah.
Also, this is a pretty on the nose example of Chicken in a Bucket. Annie's lover, played by David Beecroft, spends the rest of the third sequence in that bed. He's just laying. Oh, yeah. Leaves him there.
No.
He stays right there.
Yeah.
He's got nowhere to go and nothing to do. So, like the whole
he has a little something
to do. Driving around in the woods.
Less of a chicken in a bucket and more of a gigolo in the bed.
Yeah, gigolo in the bed. But he's got stuff to do because he's got all those Stephen King novels that are propped around him. I don't know if you guys noticed that.
A little product placement. Yes, confirmed that Annie's husband is the guy who reports the hit and run. And that's why he's late.
I completely missed that. Completely missed that. I don't know why.
I kind of suspected, but wasn't sure. And yeah, she did die from carbon monoxide poisoning because the garage door was closed, and that was
and
kind
that's
of
smoke was.
Subtly. Yes. Right.
So the so the guy was never real. Then
he was never. I mean, he was real when she first hit him, but.
Right,
he's
but
going
I mean,
crazy.
But I mean, the part where he's always going, "Thanks for the ride, lady," and like smearing his blood all over her, and then her running into that tree over and over—that's just her running into a tree over and over. She went crazy,
right? Because she's lost her mind.
Okay, mm-hmm. All right. Then that part I feel better about because I thought I was kind of going crazy. That whole thing was pretty dumb. All right. Also, a thing that grossed me out. Take a wild guess. What grossed me out the most? What do you guys think?
Oh, so many.
The one, it's very short and it's very particular that really got me.
Boy, can you give us a hint as to which scene it's
yes,
in?
Yes.
Well, there's a couple of throw up scenes.
It's
I know
in the,
that.
Yeah, the barf scenes, whatever. It's fake food in their mouth, whatever. It doesn't, that stuff doesn't bother me. Although a double barf in a movie is rare. I don't think we've had that.
It is rare.
Too. I was waiting for a third one.
I know. Happen. She should have puked when she got out of the car and saw the dead body.
Right. Right. Yeah, no, that was your moment and they missed it. She was too crazy easily. Talking to herself.
If I do the math, every orgasm plus five of these.
Oh, but carry the one and there's tax.
Oh, I think I just had another orgasm. Oh, no. Well, then I can't afford this Mercedes.
Anyway, so when, sorry, what was I saying? Oh, the grow. Okay. It was in the second, album, yeah, second thing is in the raft. And it wasn't, the other hint is it wasn't like the obvious things like their faces falling off or any of that.
Right.
Because that's
was it some kind of weird boobness? Like, did she like an inverted nipple that you didn't like or something?
Oh, no,
all right, just checking.
No,
right.
I didn't look that close.
You're weird.
I didn't look that close to that. No, it was. I'll just tell you, it was it's when the dumb one who decided to smoke later out of the car was just fingering the goo. Like, get your finger out of there. It looked like mucusy freaking like something out of somebody's a hole. Get out of there, dude. Ah, why would you do that? And I know that's just a special effect too, right? I know that. But there was something pussy about it. Ugh.
Is it pussy galore?
Yeah, pussy galore.
My least favorite James Bond girl name.
Pussy galore.
Nice. By the way, yeah, don't hang out with her. She's not good.
If only that joke would work on Twitter. Unfortunately,
right,
it's spelled
right.
exactly
it's so
the same way.
Out of context, right?
It's only audio that one works.
Yep. English is a weird language. All right. And the other thing I wrote down was, We used to have the thing in the show, black guy dies first. And this one, black guy refuses to die ever. That's the difference. Oh, true. Like that guy would just not die. Just keep right. going.
Thanks for the ride, lady.
Yeah. And then by the end, he was still just.
Oh, but he can still enunciate. I just ride a ride, lady.
Yeah. That was pretty great. His eye was hanging out. There's some good effects in here. Good practical makeup and whatever. Sure. And I wasn't sure until about, I don't know, it took a while to find out the movie was even rated R because. Pretty normal until
once you got to the raft. Yeah.
Well, I mean, you didn't even hear an F bomb until Bill Tench showed up behind the thing and then started making threats and stuff in the store. And I went, oh, right, this is R. So this will probably have gore. Oh, okay, there's some gore. Like her getting shot in the side with a shotgun and then having it sort of all over her body seeping blood. That's awful. Oh, man.
It is. But it's so disguised. Like it's, you know, it's not outright gore. It's just kind of like, perceived gore, intended gore.
It's almost worse,
exactly. Yeah,
that poor lady.
We haven't really even talked about the wraparound, the animated.
It's weird.
It is really weird, and it feels like it's so unnecessary until you get to the Venus flytraps, and you wonder if, like, oh, okay, so we had this written and then decided that the only way they could do the special effects of those Venus flytraps eating the kids is to do it as a cartoon. That's my thinking.
Kind of my thinking too.
Right.
Yeah.
Did the first movie have the cartoon interstitial or was it live action?
It had some cartoon stuff, but not nearly as much as this one.
Okay. I have such a small memory of that, but somebody on Twitter was saying, oh, I love the animation. It's so cool and innovative. I don't know, man. I think it looked really bad.
Looked really bad. There were points where it looked like Ralph Bakshi, especially the big dude, animated fatso dude.
Yeah.
Rhino, I guess is his name. There were times when his facial movements, absolutely Ralph Bakshi-esque.
Yeah.
Like very,
right.
very in that style.
Yeah. And that kind of.
Me and Ibbet talked about this offline, but I did a little deeper dive on the animator there. And it looks like they just grew up at the same time and just maybe had some of the same influences. But
maybe. Yeah.
Right.
Brian, did you say
a genre? I did.
You say a genre.
I sure did.
A genre.
Okay.
Genre.
Making sure I heard that right. Oh, I'm going to be sad when he dies. Sorry, that's morbid. Moving on. Hey, let's do clips. Do anyone have anything else to say about any of the three segments? There's so much here. I feel like I'm missing things, but I don't want to just run over it if anyone has a major plot point they wanted to make sure to bring out.
Nope.
All right.
Yeah, pretty straightforward.
Clips. Yeah, just wish it would have been, you know, more of a twist.
Yeah.
Give us something.
Give us a twist, yo. All right. Here are some clips then. These are here. I start this with some 80s ass music. So here's some real fun 80s music early on.
Boy, is that there is some Rick Wakeman right there.
Yeah,
there it is.
Yep. Yeah. That's maybe the part where you could tell that
totally.
Was
totally go nuts. Explore the space with your keyboards there, Rick Wakeman.
Explore the I hate that phrase, explore the space.
Explore the space.
It's not good. All right, here's a reference I didn't get. This is George Kennedy climbing the wooden Indian and said this to it.
Jimmy cracked corn and I don't care. As long as I'm drinking Jimmy's crack corn.
I don't get it.
Okay. Yeah, are those the actual lyrics?
No.
Good, because I only know the first part of the Jimmy crack corn and I don't care, and you repeat that for a while, but I never knew what the continuation of the lyrics were.
Yeah, but that whole...
There were a lot of puns. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there were a lot of puns and, you know, little takes on stuff like that throughout this whole movie.
Is it like corn-based alcohol that he's making a reference to?
Yeah.
All right, that's fine. Here's him getting excited about a visit.
Oh, there's Benjamin White Moon.
Oh, it's Benjamin White Moon. Things are about to go real bad for
I
me.
Loved his gentle nature in this film. I mean, it was so nice.
Yeah, did you feel like the wife was going to do, like, she sure perked up when the turquoise jewelry showed up? I thought for sure, and I'd seen this before and I'd completely forgotten about the hoodlums, but I thought, oh, she's going to do something with the turquoise jewelry,
right,
and it's going to make the Indian come to life, or the wooden Indian come to life. And,
yeah, that's what I thought too. It seemed like it was a cursed bag, you know, like careful, don't get Mugwai wet kind of moment, and it didn't happen.
Exactly.
Yeah. Here's some more music, and it's really bad. This is a different kind. This is when they're trying to be all melancholy about how the store hasn't done what they wanted and the place is kind of deserted and blah, blah, blah. Here you go. Just stop.
Just stop.
After school special.
Yeah. That's how it felt. Oh, yeah. Mom, sometimes I just don't feel fresh. Well, Jenny.
Exactly.
That happens again when, in the third sequence, when the woman is freaking out and just driving, there's music, and I'm like, what after school special is she in? Why is this music so, like,
yes.
I don't want to say no, like, totally childish? Like,
yeah, it's before the hit and run, after she's leaving, the it just feels so 100% out of place. It's so positive and peppy.
Yeah, it's wrong. It's a wrong choice. Yeah. Blame yes. Say no to yes is what I would
say.
Say
no to yes. Yeah.
All right. Here's awkward goodbyes.
Good afternoon, Martha Spruce.
Goodbye, Benjamin. I mean, good afternoon.
Oh, heaven forbid you.
But I walked around for the rest of the day and kept telling everybody, goodbye, Martha Spruce.
I'm going to start using full names when I say goodbye to people.
Right.
Like, goodbye. What do I say? Goodbye, Kim Soans Johnson. I'll say that. I'll say goodbye to my wife later. All right. Here's, what is this? Oh, this is the they've now shown up in their a-holes, and here's the fat guy laughing and saying how. So here you go.
How?
Fat guy laugh, I guess.
Yeah.
Here it is again. All right.
Yeah. I couldn't wait for Fatso to get it.
Yeah. You knew he was going to, though. It was just a matter of time.
Exactly.
Here's what? Oh, this is the other guy who we barely get to know. He's almost a chick in the bucket himself, although he dies, of course. But the rich kid says this.
Yeah, why don't you run us out of town, Sheriff?
He looked familiar to me and annoyed me.
He does some pretty good voice work. I was
really
kind of excited.
It annoyed me. I hated it.
I kind of liked it. I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah. Look, you're
Andy Kavanaugh.
Yeah. What do we know him from?
I'm sorry. The actor is Donald Patrick Harvey. Let's see. Episode of Miami Vice. He's Garber in Die Hard 2. He's Snickers in Hudson Hawk. Oh my God. He's totally Snickers.
Whoa.
Like,
whoa.
Wow.
Really?
It just came up this week.
Wait. Garber in
Die Hard 2. Garber. Yeah. I don't know who that is.
Look it up real quick. Sounds like a second in charge kind of guy.
Let's see. Better Off Dead. Tank Girl.
There he is. Weird.
Batman Beyond, he's the voice of Charles Bunce or Chucko.
There you go.
Boy, lots of one episode kind of stuff, unfortunately. Nothing where he's Detective Garcia in Taken 3. And his most recent thing is Better Call Saul, season 4, episode 1, Smoke.
Okay.
He's a cab driver.
I'll be watching that soon.
There you go.
Well, that's weird. All these things have come up in the last few days.
But totally.
And here's this guy.
And Better Call Saul. And
weird. That's weird. Also, Die Hard 2. We need to finally get around to that. What's our problem? We should make that happen.
Right.
Sipowicz is in that, man. Sipowicz. Anyway. Okay. Let's see.
Close on, thank goodness.
Yeah. No kidding. All right. Here's a blow off is what? Whoops.
Move, lady, or I'm going to blow off your old man's agobijis.
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 Is that it's like
no idea.
No idea. None.
Right. Sounds like a word that was made up for this movie.
Okay, but play it again.
All right.
I want to interpret this.
One more time. Here's Bill Tench saying a word that's probably, I don't know, Cherokee or something. Here we go.
Move, lady, or I'm going to blow off your old man's agobijis.
Agobijis.
I have no idea. That's weird.
I don't know what it is. Someone's going to write in from the nation of something and say,
I can't believe I'm Googling Native American for penis.
Yeah. That won't
I thought something nuts.
Well, probably, yeah.
It certainly won't follow you into some NSA data.
No, they probably should have done this in an incognito window. Yeah. Oh, well.
You should have typed in Cherokee nuts.
And if they ask you, you say, well, my tires on my car.
My favorite song by Cher, by the way.
Oh, Cherokee nuts, I know. Cherokee nuts. Sorry, what?
So I just looked up the script, the movie script for Creepshow 2.
Yeah.
And it says the line just ends in Navajo. Navajo in parentheses.
That's it.
Okay.
So it's a Navajo word.
Yeah.
I think he made it up.
There's a There's a Navajo living in my house, but unfortunately, she's my son's girlfriend, and there's no way I'm going to ask her if that's...
Oh, come on, go ask!
You got to ask.
We'll wait here.
So weird. Yeah. Move, lady, or I'm going to blow off your old man's ... Navajo.
Yeah. All right. Well, maybe it is Navajo for something.
That's a bummer, because I really would like to Google that phrase.
Yeah. See if it's a common thing or not. All right, how about this? This is about his hair.
9 years it took me to grow this hair, man. I'm not just f***ing around here.
It doesn't sound
that's
like...
That's actually my favorite. I love that.
That wasn't Patrick Swayze?
It sounds a lot... That's my point, is it doesn't sound like the modern Bill Tench character at all. Like, voice-wise, this is a different human being. He's just so different than... I mean, he was young, obviously, but... all right, no more... Oh, I like this line, too.
No more eating dust for a living.
Oh, yeah? How about Hollywood?
There ain't no dust in Hollywood, man.
Okay, how about...
His hair is gonna get me paid and laid.
All right, how about that?
Over here, lady. Over here, lady.
He did that...
I like that one.
He did that a lot, where he would repeat himself to tell people what to do. Hey, over Fatso, here, do this.
Hello.
And then, Fatso, I said, do this! He was, like, always double doing it. All right, here's some gang talk.
We all go home, round up whatever shit we want to take. Rich boy, you pick me up at 11. Then we'll go get Fat Stuff. How about it, Fat Stuff?
He for some reason, the actor refused to say Fatso. The character was named Fatso. He refused to ever once say Fatso. But he found Fat Stuff is okay.
Oh, that's interesting. Mm-mm. In the script, it says Fatso.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Oh,
that's crazy.
Huh. I mean, that's... Fat Stuff seems like it would be more like a, your
Oreo
name. Right.
Like an Oreo.
What's your gig name? Fat Stuff.
Fat Stuff. What'd they name it after?
Big boned.
Yeah. They named it after those huge Oreos with all the stuff in the middle. All right. Here's the, I don't know what this, I don't remember this.
Well, kiddies, that was quite a price for young Sam White Moon to pay.
I don't... What?
SpongeBob, it's time to make some more Krusty Krab burgers.
I love the pun there with the word toupee.
I mean, do you, though? I mean, not really.
I do.
Okay. I mean, you love it ironically. You love it really. Like, where
creep,
do you...
creep dad joke.
Yeah, it's pretty creep show. Hashtag blessed. All right. Here's one. something about Poncho. I don't remember.
Oh, come on, Poncho. You said you sobered up, man.
Oh, I think they were already out in the river. Mm-hmm. Or I kind of, because there wasn't a lot of great dialogue before
this
that.
Was after
he was
the,
on the raft.
This was after the they first see the muck floating around and heading towards them.
Yep. Here's more of that.
This thing doesn't look like an accident. It looks like it's on purpose.
It looks on purpose.
Looks like it's on purpose. Who made this?
What is this? so good. So dumb. It is my favorite segment, though, I think, of the three. I enjoyed it.
Oh, really? I think I like the Hitchhiker.
I don't know. The Hitchhiker's...
I mean, just in terms of quality, I think the Hitchhiker's...
Yeah, the Hitchhiker is much more memorable.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know. I'm torn.
And I got to go with the old Chief Woodenhead, because... Chief Woodenhead himself murders people, and in one murder, he's a shadow on the wall. That's what I can't believe that.
That was great. Yeah. I almost gifted it
on a garage door.
Yeah, I meant to gift that moment, and I didn't. I got a few other good ones. Oh, there's some good gifts in this movie. Gift potential high in Creep Show 2. All right, here's this him getting mad at Poncho right here. Oh wait, did I already do this?
This thing doesn't look like it.
Oh yeah, I did that. Okay, here's the Poncho bit.
What is this shit, Poncho?
Ooh. Jeez. All right, fine.
Apparently it's still close to the fake Foreigner music playing in the car at that point.
Yep. Here's okay. This is just Don't Leave Me.
Don't leave us here. Don't.
I'm fast and I can make it.
You know what? He's right. That thing was the slow ass movingest thing. Everybody just jump in and swim away. Now that it's under the unit, jump in, swim as fast as you can to the shore, and then don't be on the shore very long. Get up off the shore, get to your car, and go home. You bunch of dicks. Oh, they're the worst, these kids. But that's part of the fun, I guess. All right. Now, normally, Ibbit's mom sends me tapes. All right.
Good. I think I might get a reprieve this week. Yeah. I think somebody else's.
Yeah. Tapes about, you know, prom night and just growing up stuff normally. But I got one this time from Randy's mom, and it was very kind of her to do this. It was really
sweet. Hold on a second.
Yeah.
My mom, who the extent of her technological usage is Facebook, which she is really good at, by the way.
Well, she just mailed my mom a cassette. That's all this is, just a cassette.
Oh, okay. That makes sense because I'm sure she still uses a cassette player, and I'm sure of it.
Yeah. She's still got all these old tapes of you when you were younger.
A micro cassette player even.
Right. And this was, she has tape. I don't know how she got it, but this is prom night for you. And this is what your girlfriend said in the evening. I don't have context for what was going on. I mean, it could have been weird. I don't know. But this is what she said. Whoops. Here you go.
I'm freezing, Randy. I'm numb all over.
Okay. All right. Did you give her a little, you slip her a little something? Like, I don't know what you did. I'm just saying. I don't know. Jeez,
at least let her wear your letter jacket, Randy.
I did grow up on a river that sometimes got a little cold. So.
Yeah. I had one of those too. Yeah. We had a swimming hole and a guy died in it once. Anyway, moving on.
Whoa, what?
Yeah, we had, so I don't know if you guys, probably outside of Utah, no one knows about this, but in 1983, we had the biggest, most like kind of horrific overflow flooding we've ever had in the valley. And it was from so much snow that winter that the following spring, the runoff was just flooding every river, every waterway, everything. And so even mainstream downtown Salt Lake City was sandbagged into a river form and there was no traffic on it for about, I don't know, 3 weeks, where just a giant river was running down Main Street. Anyway,
a river runs through it.
Where I lived was this river called Big Cottonwood Creek, or is it Little Cottonwood Creek, whatever it is. And there was a swimming hole we used to swim in all the time over by this bridge. And one night when all this stuff was going on and we were all, everybody was sandbagging everything and that river was cresting and whatever, I watched the police pull the body of like some 33-year-old dude out. Had fallen in up the river some and then had just died, you know, had drowned in there and they'd pulled him out.
You know what's funny? You said this was an old man.
Well, at the time it seemed like old man because I was, what, 14? What was I in?
Right.
83.
They pulled this really old man out.
It's probably 13 or 14 and I remember just being, I was blown away by that. In fact, I think it kind of put me in shock because I'd never really seen a dead body. You ever seen a dead body? That whole thing, I'd never seen one. So for me, it was all movies and, you know, never seen a dead person. And I think I was in shock because later that night I woke up, apparently, I don't remember this, but I woke up and walked around the house, barfed on my mom's couch, and then fell asleep on the floor and curled up in a ball. And everyone thinks it's because I had like a weird shock reaction.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah. But what was great is the couch I barfed on looked like barf naturally. So
it just blended right in.
It blended right in. You never really knew, you know, you could just kind of wipe it down.
Use a black light to figure out where the barf was so you could clean it up.
Exactly. And we had no use of the CSI people. So it never had to happen. It was great. All right. Here's six plus more.
I counted six orgasms and you probably had others.
Whoa. Really? I wouldn't know that part. Okay.
Let's break it down.
And you probably had others part is concerning to me. Because why would he say that? Or why would he know that? Or why would he
probably had others while I was in the other room fixing a sandwich.
While I was fueling up for your next orgasm, you had more when I was gone. I just thought that was weird. All right. Stephen King saying, what the heck happened?
Hey, buddy. What the happened?
That's about all you get out of that, dude.
Yeah.
Well, no, that's not true. There's a little more here.
What's happening? What do you think's happening? That guy got creamed. That's what happened.
There you go. That's about all you
got. I think you took that guy's wallet.
It's not as fun as his Chia Pet thing he did in the first one. But
No, it really isn't. Like, boy, it seemed like there were so many more opportunities for him to make a cameo than just truck driver dude who drives by to see the hit and run.
Such a weird dude.
Yeah.
All right. This is that line Dunaway likes. Here you go.
You're seeing things, bitch.
There you go. That's pretty good.
I like it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a good line.
Lois.
Then she yells this.
I got you.
And then she says.
I ran over some guy.
That's pretty good. I'm going to use that one.
Is that her explaining, like fake explaining, you know, how she's going to explain to the cops or something or to her husband?
I don't know. She's just yelling at herself in that car. There was a lot of self-dialogue in that car with her. Mm-hmm. And she was super into it. And so I'd say that segment.
Pretty good.
Yeah, pretty good. All right. Mm-hmm. Well done. Now time for us to dive into this. The Film Sack Checklist. Two barfs for the price of one. Check. That Firebird battery won't last forever. Check. And finally, creepily macking on your fellow lake buddy while she's sleeping. Check. Gross. Trek Connection. Tom Wright is the hitchhiker. And he's the dude what got pummeled over and over and over. In Voyager, he played Tuvix in the episode Tuvix.
Not just one Vic, but two Vics.
Yep, I kind of remember that one, and I remember him being good. So there's where that guy came from. And then you got Frank Celesdo, who played Ben Whitemoon, the older man. Mm-hmm. He was the Native American guy in the background of the recreation deck scenes in TNG. He played it, and that was on Star Trek The Motion Picture. In TNG, he played a tribal council member in the seventh season episode Journey's End. So there's that. Okay. So Ben Whitemoon getting around. Said goodbye, Martha, whatever, as he walked by. Okay, there you go. Soundtrack grade, give it a T for pretty terrible. I thought it was kind of bad. It's just not remotely good. Mm-hmm. There's nothing about it I can say is good. Twitter post, this is where you guys sum it up in 280 characters or less. Let's start this week with Randy.
Creepshow 2. You know what? People just want to get it on. Whether it's with Bikini Babes or $150 gigolos or the promise of whatever must be going on in Hollywood, people are thirsty and they're trying to have sexy sex and they must be punished.
Right.
It's true.
This is true. You stayed in your 280. Nice job. Also, Brian Dunaway.
Oh, hi. Creepshow 2. Like a war chief without paint on a dry day. That's a scalping. Or I fought the lake, but the blob won.
Oh.
Thanks for the ride, lady.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what? I feel so dumb.
Why?
I honestly thought that Chief Woodenhead cut off the guy's hair. It didn't occur to me for a while that that was a scalping.
Yeah, it was a scalp.
Right. Scalping. Because earlier, the character had brought up the cutting of the hair, like the Samson parable, whatever. And now I'm seeing him getting scalped, but I'm thinking, oh, it's just a haircut. Mm-hmm. And then like some time goes by and I'm like, oh, wait, that's a scalp.
The worst thing you could possibly do is cut that guy's beautiful flowing hair. That's going to make him so much money in Hollywood.
Mm-hmm. All right. Pretty
good shot of him getting yanked through the bathroom wall. I like that. Mm-hmm.
That was bad. Yeah,
it was a good time. Finally, Brian Ibbett.
Creepshow 2. Sorry, dirty teenagers. Lake's closed. Overgrown no swimming sign out shot outside should have told you.
I like this character we never get to see. He would have been great.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. I'm sad that we didn't get to have
John Candy as the blob.
Great. Here's this. In my hands, just handed to me the alternate title for this film. Let me open this up. This was almost called, what is a long one? This is a story about Dangerous Dean and the case of his missing class ring. Oh, it rhymes. That's nice. I like that.
The class ring. They're so focused on that class
ring.
They
really were. And having it kind of pop off as he got yanked through there. Mm-hmm. He needed to die, though. He sucks. His little yellow bikini banana hammock thing. He sucks.
He was into yellow.
Boy, that was, that was almost X-rated there, that yellow bikini.
And the way he was yanking at it, I kept thinking he was trying to take it off. I'm like, dude, not now. Don't take that off. But he was trying to just take out the pot or whatever he had.
Yeah.
Anyway, and then it was also almost called Indian Sliver. Get it? Oh. It's like Indian Giver, but he's made of wood. So he's, a sliver, see?
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Took a minute, but we all got it now.
Yeah.
Got a couple things to play here. One's an email, one's a call. This first one came to us to filmsack@gmail.com. It came from Jeff, who says, hello, Sackers. I thoroughly enjoyed the Vampire's Kiss episode as I pondered the memes that are because of Nicolas Cage was in this movie. That was one of the big revelations, by the way, is a lot of people are like, I've seen this him pointing meme a billion times. I've seen that GIF a thousand times and never knew what it
Am
was
I
for.
Getting through, Alva?
Yeah, that whole thing was really revelatory for a lot of our listeners. But anyway, it says, multiple times you discussed his accent and how it fell off throughout the movie. As I was listening, I noticed where I had heard Cage use a similar affectation. It was in Gone in 60 Seconds. I could swear that Cage's character in Gone in 60 Seconds, Memphis Reigns was his name, is at the Ferrari dealership and discussing cars with the salesman. He uses almost the exact same accent, not quite English, and it is certainly pretentious and seems intentional. For example, I've been in LA for 3 months now. I have money. I have taste. But I'm not on anybody's A-list. Or I'm not on anybody's A-list, and Saturday night is the loneliest night of the week for me. That's the clip. Now, he sent me a YouTube video. I did a horrible version of it. Let's see if this is better. Hold on. I got to pull it up into YouTube. Okay, here we go. This is that line.
My name is Roger. Sir, may I be of some help?
That's funny. My name's Roger. Two Rogers don't make a right. Roger, I have a problem.
Yes.
I've been in L.A. for 3 months now. I have money. I have taste. But I'm not on anybody's A-list, and Saturday night is the loneliest night of the week for me.
Okay, kind of. I see it.
Huh. I'd say it's on the Nicolas Cage spectrum, but I'd say that his Vampire's Kiss accent is probably... 3/4 of the way to his Peggy Sue Got Married accent.
Yeah.
You know, if you drew a line from that one that we just heard to Peggy Sue Got Married, Vampire's Kiss is about 3/4 of the way down that road.
I think you're right.
And I gotta say, I love Gone in 60 Seconds so much. Like, I was just railing all over Nick Cage having never done anything good last week. And it's like, yeah, but that and Con Air are movies that I will absolutely sit and rewatch anytime.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Put the baby back in the box.
You don't even have to ask. I'll watch The Rock right now. Like, right now I'll watch it. Oh, my gosh. Make me want to watch The Rock is what you've done. Nice job. I want to hear him say, you ever riff the prom queen? Oh, there's so much to do. Oh, it's so good. Anyway, he finally finishes his email. He says this line in a nasally way that is very similar to his Vampire Kiss character. As a tool to disarm. Maybe he is aware of his choices and that he just wants to have fun, or maybe I believe he is ridiculous in how he chooses to speak. Either way, thank you for helping me remember a movie that I'm likely to watch repeatedly, Gone in 60 Seconds. Keep on sacking, Jeff. Well, thank you, Jeff. Good stuff all around. Now, one of these is a phone call, and I don't have it handy. Why don't I? Oh, here it is. This is about a movie we forgot to mention on a previous episode and a clarification, so here you go.
Hey, Film Sack crew, it's Michael here from Edmonton. Long, 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 long time listener. Love you guys so much. Just wanted to obviously add a little correction in your last episode. Hayden Christensen's movie was called Jumper. Yes, Jumper.
Oh, yeah.
And Chris Evans was in Push. Yeah, probably a lot of people are going to tell you about that. I'm just going to be annoying with them. It's fun. Cheers.
He's right. We said Push. We meant Jumper. We screwed that
Jumper.
Up. Yeah.
I wish you would get the titles right, my friend.
You've been living in. Oh, you make me want to hear that song now, too.
Nicely done. Then I'm sorry.
Oh, whoops. Anyway, hey, that's voicemail, and they can come to 801-471-0462, and we encourage that. We'd love to hear your thoughts, your feelings, your corrections, whatever it is. We're open. Our next film is a recommendation from Brian Ibbett I'd never heard of before. Also on Amazon Prime. We're finishing out, well, the next, I think our next couple of movies
are
Prime
movies. We got two more Amazon Prime films, folks. Yeah. Stick with Amazon with us next week. What is it, Scott?
The Gate. 1987's The Gate, which I've never heard of before.
Yes.
And Brian showed a trailer, and I lost my mind. We are so looking forward to this. It looks amazing.
Here's the thing.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. Sacktober is all about getting scared. It's not necessarily getting scared by something good, though.
Yeah. No, and that's definitely what this is. Yeah. As best I can tell. But
it's a bunch of little critter dudes running around, and sometimes they make up a whole person, and the person falls over, and those little critter dudes go running around.
Yeah, it's going to be rad. Big props to Ibbett for finding it, and we will watch it next week. If you have Amazon Prime, that's where you'll watch it. It is called, again, The Gate. And then we've got plans for a big Halloween month. We won't give it all away yet, but looking forward to we love that. Plus, it's our 10-year anniversary this coming month, which is nuts.
Yeah.
Nuts. Wow. Nuts, guys. Decade of Film Sack. What is that even about? All right. That's going to do it for us. Thank you all for being here. As always, filmsack.com is the website you can go to find this and everything else you're looking for. That includes links to things like our email address, filmsack@gmail.com. Our Twitter account is @filmsack. And again, voicemails, love them. Keep them coming, 801-471-0462. That will do it for this episode. Thank you all for joining us. For me, for Brian, and for Randy.
Thanks for the ride, lady.
See you next time.
That's really the only one you could have done.
Yeah. This show is part of the Frog Pants Network.
Frog Pants Network.
Get more shows like this at frogpants.com.
You're seeing things, bitch.
That's a good one.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There's stories and mythology that this country has woven around black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like worried of police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.